The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome
to Clare Island Cassettes.
Here on Fresh FM. Our guest is about to be cast away
to Clare Island.
As they hurry to pack a suitcase, they may choose five pieces of music. Five pieces that in some way soundtrack their lives. Music that may shed light on who they are, where they've been and what they've come through. Let's hear their story and their music.
All aboard!
And today I'm very happy to welcome Martin into Studio One in Founders in Fresh FM for his episode of Clare Island Cassettes, where he chooses five, possibly six, maybe even seven tracks to take with him to the Aran Islands. Sorry, the Clare Island. See? Slip of the tongue. We rebranded, Martin. You're welcome. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, lovely, Karen.
First time in Studio One?
Indeed, yeah.
You've been in Founders Park, I'm sure, before.
I've done that a lot, yes, but never been in here.
And you've looked in here dreaming about the day you get in here. Well, we're here anyway, and we were discussing the finer points of this, the crux of this show, and it is a difficult thing to do to pick a handful of songs that both soundtrack and that you're going to have to listen to them for an indefinite amount of time on a desert island.
Yes, I was finding that challenging, given, sort of a pedantic turn of mind sometimes. But when I heard you say soundtrack, that's certainly one I can fit in with, I think. And it does overlap a lot with ones I simply must have.
Yes, I know
what you
mean.
But they're not an identical list. So,
well, I suppose, like we were saying at the start, we can revisit. You can maybe come back on a day trip. You've spent a few months there. You know what you like. And maybe you can either substitute or bolster your collection, maybe do a few swapsies and head back again.
I was thinking I'd have a neighbouring desert island where I go to listen to the must-haves.
Right. Well, do you know what we'll do so? We'll set the tone. We'll get your first track on. What's your first track?
Let's go. It's The Monkees, Last Train to Clarksville.
Okay. We'll get that on and we'll come back and have a chat.
Right.
You're listening to Kieran on Fresh FM. This is Clare Island Cassettes. And today I'm lucky enough to have Martin, who's going to share the discs that soundtrack his life and the ones that he's happy enough to bring to the Clare Island forever.
Take the last train to Clarksville and I'll meet you at the station. You can be here by 4:30 because I've made your reservation. Don't be slow. No. Cause I'm leaving in the morning and I must see you again. We'll have one more night together till the morning brings my train and I must go. No. And I don't know if I'm ever coming home. Bit of conversation. Take the last train to Clarksville. Now I must hang up the phone. I can't hear you in this noisy railroad station. All alone, I'm feeling low. No. And I don't know if I'm
salvation, don't be slow. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, no, no. And I don't know if I'm ever coming home. Take the last train to Clarksville.
Did you take the last train to Clarksville, Martin? That's your first choice?
Oh, yeah. Would I take it? I'd certainly take it with me.
Good. Yeah, yeah. That's the Monkees. That's back in 66 for your first choice.
That's right.
Tell me more.
Well, middle 60s, I was probably, what was I, sort of, you know, early teenage years and dimly aware through sort of newspapers and things that there was a 60s pop revolution.
You were here at this stage, yeah?
Yes, we're here in New Zealand. Going on, having gone on, and there wasn't a great deal of sort of stuff you could sort of access, really, right, that brought it alive. There was a magazine called Fab.
You had to have the physical copy of it, like.
Yeah, but there was a TV program called The Monkees.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yes, and so, you know, I began watching that with my brother, and it was pretty cool. Now, my family were not avid churchgoers, but we went to the cathedral. That was sort of where we went. And I got signed up for confirmation classes.
As you do, which, that's what happens.
Yes, yes. And I dutifully went, but to me at huge cost, because all I was interested in, I would rush home and say to my brother, what was on the Monkees?
Right, what happened? Right, you know?
And I can't remember a single detail of confirmation other than,
You missed the Monkees.
It occurred. Yeah, that's right. That was the
defining aspect of your
yes, that's right.
So transformation into the faith.
Yeah. So there was a lot of Monkees tunes, but that is, I think, you know, that's a classic one with a great riff, which it came out after the Beatles' Paperback Writer, but borrowed a great deal from that, and they acknowledged that at the time. Yeah. Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, who wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the Beatles were never shy in referencing the music that they were heavily influenced by. That was the era of it, wasn't it? People covered songs. You wrote a song, someone covered it a week later. Like,
that's right.
That was the time.
Or were influenced by it, you know, Beach Boys and Beatles and Bob Dylan feeding off one another.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So would that TV program been an early introduction to music for music's sake as opposed
probably
to?
Probably by that time it was sort of simultaneous with other musical desires and tastes being fulfilled. So actually the first person to make inroads in that way in the family was my brother.
Okay. Older?
And,
older?
No, younger.
Younger.
Yeah, and he wanted a guitar. So mum and dad bought him a guitar, bought him lessons at a place in town. I felt a bit left out. I'd always wanted to play the harmonica, or so I thought. So I sort of made a case for having a harmonica, and I was bought a Larry Adler chromatic harmonica, and because there was no harmonica lessons available, quite a high-level academic book on how to play the harmonica. Both the harmonica and the book sort of completely baffled me.
Okay.
But if I picked up my brother's guitar, I could pick out Home on the Range and the sort of stuff that he was learning.
Right.
We must have had other harmonicas around the house, because Nigel picked up the harmonica and, he seemed to have a natural aptitude for that.
Okay.
So more or less at that point, we swapped. Nigel stopped going to lessons and I took them up because they'd been paid for.
Right.
And Nigel made his own sort of parallel career playing the harmonica.
Right.
So that was the musical stuff going on at the time.
Right.
And,
Was there music in the house?
Music. We had an old wind-up gramophone player and a huge but limited selection of Gilbert and Sullivan light operas.
Okay.
Yeah.
The radio would have been probably state broadcasts.
Well, yes.
Limited
2ZN
enough
at the time. But another sort of musical event at the time was Dad bought my brother and I Philips Potmask for transistor radios. And these were a little thing about the size of a paperback book, but they were groundbreaking or for their time. And there was a program on 2ZB, the Wellington program, called Blues is News, and it came on the unearthly hour of 11 o'clock at night.
Ooh.
And we would stay up and listen to that on our headphones.
Right.
And yeah, so it got into the blues then as well.
Okay. And they would have been, would they have been playing American blues and British blues?
Yes. Yeah. Heard a lot of John Mayle and
right.
But yeah, you know, it was a
good introduction.
Yes, indeed.
Good place to start.
Yes.
Very good. So you've continued with your, have, did the two paths continue as they were with the harmonica and the guitar? How did they go?
Pretty much, yes. I mean, I've certainly continued with the guitar. I've retained the aspirations to play a harmonica, and I've got several harmonicas, and yeah, I'm looking at that again sort of semi-seriously. I go to the Nelson Blues Club nights, and there's some great harmonica players there.
Right.
Inspirational guys, yeah.
Right. But you've been more drawn to the guitar through that period.
Well, I have, because I had more of a natural aptitude for that, playing by ear. I mean, I should have learned to read music, but at that period of learning, when you find you can do it anyway, that doesn't that just seems like hard work, you know.
Okay.
But there were musical events later in my life where it was necessary that I get some theory behind me and some understanding of the music.
Okay.
You know, and
the mechanics.
And the dots on the page.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, where are we going next?
Well, I mentioned paperback writer. And let's see how we... Well, no, I think I've mentioned the Beatles. That's good enough. And we've heard Last Train to Clarksville, which pays homage to that. Probably my next track would be, chronologically and meaningfully, the Siegel Schwall Band, a track called Bring It With You When You Come from 1967.
Bring It With You
When You Come.
Siegel Schwall.
Yep.
That's who I'm looking for, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll get that on. We'll sit back and that'll be new to me now. I haven't heard those boys before. So I'm looking forward to hearing this. And then I'm looking forward to hearing more about why you chose it and why you're bringing it with you to the Clare Islands. Because you're soon heading off there with a suitcase. You'll also be able to bring a book and one luxury item. And we'll discuss that later on.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's get this on. This is Bring It With You When You Come by Siegel Schwall. Schwall. Am I right?
Well, I've never heard it pronounced by anyone who knows how to say it. But
Willie Watson does it as well. That was an easy one. He covers it. Anyway, let's get this on.
Right.
life, my dear. If you wanna be my baby, bring it with you when you come.
There you have it, some Chicago blues from Siegel Schwal. Yeah. New one to me now, but I like it, yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Plenty of bass going on.
Mm. Yeah.
So you're bringing that with you?
I certainly would, yes, I'll bring it with me when I go.
Good.
Yes. Now, we got into that, probably that came out of two or three influences. One would be, say, listening to Blues as News on the radio.
I'm guessing that would...
Yes.
That would explain the Chicago blues.
It would, and can't remember who sings, but the Siegel of Siegel Schwal is Corky Siegel, who was an excellent harmonica player, blues harmonica player.
I saw harmonica here with his piano, electric piano, harmonica and vocals. That's Corky,
right.
Yeah.
So probably is him singing. I had a look at his website last night and he's still doing stuff.
Right.
So there was the harmonica angle, for both of us, my brother and I.
Yeah.
Not sure whether I had a mandolin at that stage, but I was really taken with that virtuoso mandolin solo.
Right.
And how free it was compared to, I mean, I love bluegrass mandolin.
Right.
But this one seemed to go a lot of other places, bending strings and things like this. So I really, really enjoyed that. Yes, and I had the Siegel Schwal band album. And I've still got a very, very thumbed, worn copy. Siegel Schwal went on to do, in fact, this was Corky Siegel's thing. If everyone looks at his website, he's done orchestral stuff, and he's done pieces in conjunction with, I think, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra on Deutsche Grammophon label.
Right.
And as well as having the LP... we saw in town somewhere the single of his composition for harmonica, blues harmonica and orchestra. And we simply felt we had to have this record.
Right.
Now, you know, these were days when, you know, we didn't, you know, if you had pocket money, that was cool. You certainly didn't have very much. And we looked at the price of this.
They'd be well-considered purchases.
Oh, it certainly would. Yeah. And we must have been in sort of slightly different financial situations at the moment, because I've got the single at home, and on it is written, now I don't know who is whose, but one of us owned $2.71 worth of shares, and the other one owned half of that, $1.30-something.
Ownership.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
You know, we'd scraped it together somehow. Must have taken some milk bottles back or something like that, you know.
Okay, very good. Well, I mean, the result was what you wanted. You got the record.
Yes.
Very good.
That's right.
And did you ever play together?
We have, actually.
When you were younger,
Not really much at the time. In later years in Christchurch, we had a little sort of garage band with some friends.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, actually, some years ago, we did do a blues number at Acoustic Roots.
Okay.
But no, it hasn't been a big thing that we've done.
Okay.
No.
Right. Very good.
Yeah.
But at least you came together anyway and were able to purchase that record.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Well, that was the main thing at that time, I suppose.
Yeah.
And you still have it?
Yes, we do, yeah.
Very good.
I had a crappy old record player from somewhere and, you know, anyway, that's...
Well, that was the way of it then, wasn't it? You had to physically have it or hear it on the radio. And if you heard it on the radio and you were trying to get it, then that became its own...
Yes.
Its own job in itself, wasn't it, to locate it and then get the funds and purchase it.
Exactly.
And not fight over it.
It was no small thing.
Exactly,
sure.
Exactly. So you're starting to build your record, or at least your single collection at this age now.
Well, I suppose so, but probably sort of accidentally.
Okay.
Really, yeah.
It'd be stuff you were hearing on the radio, it'd be...
Yeah, I can't remember.
Would you be talking about it in school? Was there...
Hmm?
Would it have been something discussed at school in the off time? Did you hear this?
But again, apart from one instance that I'll get to shortly, it wasn't a big element of being at school.
Okay.
Until a bit later.
Okay.
For some reason, singles weren't as attractive. I mean, I've got some from those years, but
yeah.
I haven't got any particular feeling of connection with them.
Okay, more of the album.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
There's more to read and something to hold and
okay.
Something to treasure.
The what's it called? The double fold. The big LP. What do they call it?
Gatefold.
Gatefold.
That's a magazine, isn't it?
What do they call it when the LPs that
double. Yeah.
Centrefold, is it?
No, that's the other magazine I'm thinking of. No.
You know what I mean, anyway?
I do, yeah.
The nicely packaged booklet inside.
Yes.
Like the way the CDs went, with a nice, big, thick book with the lyrics and the pictures and the stories. Yeah. Not just the single you're buying, or not just the album you're buying.
No, that's you're buying pictures of the band and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, you'll have to tune in, so, in a couple of weeks when I do a show on Top of the Morning where we do album art. We do famous album covers.
Mm.
We're going to look at some of the more iconic ones. Some of them are pieces of art.
You know, for sure.
The whole thing is a complete between the music, the packaging, production, the art, the lyrics, the text, the graphics. You know, they are some of them really and still look like you know, that pop art, if you want to call it like that,
indeed.
Or the the nice pictures or the photos, and
there's some really
really cool ones around.
Yeah.
Right. Let us get to packing this suitcase.
Okay. Well, the next number I've chosen is the Jim Quiskin Jug Band and a number called Washington at Valley Forge.
Washington at
Valley Forge.
Oh, yeah. Do you want the live version? Is it the live version here?
The one that I'm familiar with is the one off the album. The album's got a picture of the band standing around on a pale coloured background.
You might have to run around here and show me. I hope we have it here. We have him anyway.
Oh, no. No, Jim Quiskin.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
There we go. This fella.
Yes.
Ah.
And that's the album.
Ah, very good. Right, we found it. Let's get it on. I had the wrong man up. Right, this is Washington at Valley Forge. And this is Martin's third choice on Clare Island Cassettes on Fresh FM.
Yeah.
Washington at Valley Forge. Freezing cold, but up no jokes. What audio? What audio?
Finished quickly.
It did, yeah. Well, they're short songs and...
Plus we were talking. Plus we were yapping away.
That's
about...
That's right, we were, yeah.
About centrefolds. So that was... Tell me about that one. That was George Washington, obviously, I'm guessing.
Yes, that's right. So the connection here is...
He didn't write it, no.
No?
He didn't write it, no. Let's just clarify. He didn't. We don't think he wrote it.
No, he didn't write it.
And but he might have been there.
There's a few links here. The song was written by a couple sort of early years, I believe, of last century called Yellen and Agar. And they did a whole lot of like really good story type tunes.
Right.
And they always had sort of interesting names like Sadie Green, the Vamp of New Orleans, Hard-Hearted Hannah, Big Bad Bill, and they told stories.
Right.
And so, yeah, this is the Jim Queskin jug band version of that. But the jug band connection is, and I referred before to a couple of items. Well, the big thing about being at Nelson College and what came out of music was in about the third or fourth form, in biology class, I sat next to a guy. We were sat alphabetically, so H was next to G, and I got talking to my G surnamed neighbour, and you know, we found out that we both played guitar, and he said, "Oh, you know, would you like? You know, I've got some mates who are forming a jug band. What's that? You know?" And I said, "Well, yeah, that'd be good. You know, I do love playing guitar." By that time, I must have acquired a mandolin and a banjo between this and the last track. Well, that's probably why the mandolin appealed to me.
Okay.
Anyway, and I got together with some other guys in other forms at Nelson College, and we became the 1812 Colonial Cleansing Company Jug Band.
Okay.
In which I played guitar, banjo.
Are they on Spotify?
Oh, sorry. I just moved something here, and suddenly the voice became clear.
That's Studio One at Fresh FM.
Yeah.
Is that plugged in at the
back? But it's gone now.
That looks like it's loose at the back, is it?
I don't know, but suddenly your voice, I can hear you properly.
Really? And has it gone again?
Yeah. I just went like that. Because I'm not really hearing you through the mic.
That's shit.
Headphones, I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can carry on.
I wonder, is there something on there? It's back again.
Oh, it's this.
Oh, that's a shitty connection in the headphones. Oh, yeah.
I must have hit it with my knee.
The old knees will get you. Minor technical difficulties here for the jug band in Studio One.
There we are. Oh, that's more like it. Goodness.
Whole different show now, Martin. We'll have to go back and start again. We'll have to sort that out. I have a bit of electrical tape there in the car. Any good?
It's gone now.
You'll have to keep your hand on it. We'll get on a song and we'll try it out.
I got it.
Don't move.
I shoved a ballpoint pen up it.
Very good. No, where were we?
I just need to turn it down a bit now because I'm being deafened by the proper sound. What's the ballpoint pen's? Here we go. Are we still there?
We're still here.
Yeah, that's good.
So give us the name of that band again you were in that was on Spotify.
Right. The band had lots of names, but mostly it was the 1812 Colonial Cleansing Company Jug Band.
Okay.
And
school band.
Well, we competed in a school talent quest at the end of the year, and we got it was more like a showpiece of Nelson College art, music, the brass band and all that type of thing. So we, you know, we performed. However, either that year or the next year, we did perform.
Where are we here now? We're still in the 60s. We moved into the 70s.
We're in the late 60s. Yeah. And I think at the end of 1969, we entered the talent quest. Now, what there used to be in Nelson, every new year, they would block off Trafalgar Street, Hardy and Bridge, bit like they do sometimes now, and they'd have a talent quest, among other things. And, of course, it was a big deal in those days because, apart from Friday night, town shut at 5 or 5.30. And
like it still does.
Pretty much. But, you know, those sort of things,
right. Yeah,
there wasn't that street stuff going on. And so there was a 2ZN, was the local radio station, and they had a talent quest. And I'll read something from the photo news at the time.
Go for it.
So great was the interest in this year's 2ZN talent quest at the Mardi Gras that many entries had to be turned away. As it was, 25 contestants, individuals and groups, competed for the $175 in prize money. I will actually give the winner I will name the winner, was 16-year-old folk singer Therese Simpson of Nelson. And then they named the second place a Christchurch band and a third place a Hamilton singer. One of the most unusual acts was the 1812 Colonial Cleansing Company Jug Band of Nelson. And then we're all listed. There was one, two, three, four, five, six of us. And so the jug band became how I sort of had to become a bit more, improve my musical abilities, got some performing experience, learning from other musicians, playing with other musicians, hearing what's going on, having a very good time at the same time, because as probably the name implies, we weren't a serious band, and we weren't probably...
Serious, but not serious.
Well...
You're serious all the same.
Serious about having a good time and enjoying this music.
Good.
And there was probably only one of us, Ian, who I sat next to in biology, who sort of could work out what the chords were and that sort of thing.
Right.
So that was good. But, you know, as the time went on, we played at various places around Nelson and under a variety of names, Big Leg, Emma's Muscle Washers, the Hot Mumble Spasm Band comes to mind.
Sounds like modernist poetry.
And, so that was a huge influence on my musical and, my musical development and what goes along with music if you do put yourself out there a little bit and perform.
Right.
And so going back to that tune, Washington at Valley Forge was just one that we played. Actually, the versions that we derived our first two numbers from were from I always thought a Dunedin band, but I looked them up, a Christchurch jug band called the Band of Hope. And if you look on it now, you'll find that had a whole lot of guys that were probably well-known at the time in their fields, and some of them became far more well-known, like Phil Garland for folk music. Guys who went on to bands, I think, like the Windy City Strugglers. Now, this isn't an accurate music trivia rendition. So, anyone might question those. Oh,
if you want to contact the show, do so.
Those histories.
We'll deal with them in order.
Yes, that's right. But anyway, so we thought, wow, here's a New Zealand jug band doing stuff, and it sounds like they're having a good time, and it felt accessible.
Yeah.
And so we let them off that. But one of the tunes was Washington Valley Forge. At the time, we lived in Washington Valley.
Okay.
So that was enough of a link. And furthermore, down the end of Washington Valley at that time, where there's sort of a nondescript sort of shop there now, but on the beginning of the triangle that goes around Pioneer Park was a coffee shop called originally the Hurricane Lamp, but then the Middle Earth. And this was just the coolest place to go and hang out on a Friday and Saturday night. And they had performers, and it was dark inside and candles. And, it was like a groovy place to be. And so we would play there. And other places as well. I mean, I've got a scrapbook of other gigs that we did.
Right.
Yes. So there we are. Jug band, that became a
very good
bit of a thing.
Very good. So that's another one. She's in the suitcase.
Oh, yeah.
You're happy with that? Bring back some good memories?
Yes. Yes.
Very good. Right. What is your number four?
Well, I'm not going to ask that you play this, but a connection with the Middle Earth was their sort of multimedia, or we turned them into multimedia nights. Now, in parallel with the music, my brother and I had been making home movies, and we had a Super 8 camera, probably Standard 8 to begin with, and then Super 8, and we'd film just daft things around the place and, splice films together and, again, in the same spirit as the music, really. We were having fun. And we were doing similar things with tapes, cut up, William Burroughs cut up tapes. We were doing cut up movies or cutting up, splicing together film and making, I call them movies, but.
You can call them what you want.
Yes, that's
right. They're
yours. So they were. And so one of them was called The Flying Saucer Menace. And it was called that because the shot that began it was a copy of a magazine called The Flying Saucer Menace in flames on the ground. And so we would show these things at the Middle Earth on a screen behind the counter, I think, while the band was playing.
Very Andy Warhol.
Yes, that's right.
Or exploding plastic. What was the exploding plastic thing he had?
Yeah, I don't know.
They were projecting
that's right.
images on the screen behind the bands.
Yes.
Very avant-garde, Martin. Very avant-garde.
Yes. So we did that thing. That was like random images. You know, we'd scratch movies and pour things on the film and that sort of thing. But if we were in the intervals, we would have a sort of a structured movie. And this one called The Flying Saucer Menace, the music we had for it was Gustav Holst's Mars, the Bringer of War, which was sort of a, you know, dramatic, classical.
Well, do you want to bring it to the, if you want to bring it to the island, we'll play it.
There's well, you know, maybe play a couple of minutes of it so people understand what it is and how it works. And I would take it to the – I'd take the whole album to the island, to be frank.
What's the album called?
The Planets.
See, can we find it here? Holst. So yeah. What track am I playing?
Mars, the Bringer of War. There's lots of orchestras doing it.
Well, we'll stick on a few minutes of this.
Yeah.
We could even stick it on and...
I mean, I think it's about a 7-minute piece. That might be a bit much for... I'll leave it with you, Kieran, to
It definitely sounds... it has that element of... menace.
It does, yes. Yeah.
You could have it on Star Wars. That's what it kind of reminds me of.
I think, yeah, Yes, I'm sure it's been the inspiration for many sort of...
How old is that? How far are we going back?
Oh, well, I don't know. I think he would have wrote it in early years of last century. I don't know.
The Bringer of War. Yeah. That's even the way... What's that, Dune? Is that one of those films? The Oppenheimer, The Destroyer of Worlds. It's got that feel to it.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's obviously a...
dramatic.
A dramatic and worthwhile piece in its own right, but paired with... almost didn't matter what the image was. You pair that music and an image, or any music and any image, and something greater than the sum of the parts occurs. And so, you know, I mean, our filming was up the Mai Tai, jumping in the river, sliding the car around the old gravel road up the Mai Tai.
Anything, really.
I mean, because we're so accustomed to sort of film music emphasizing what's meant to be conveyed, you couldn't help but turn this into make it have some meaning, you know? And so that was just fantastic to learn about that.
Good fun.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Very good. Mm. Well, the album is Holst, The Planets.
Yes.
If people want to check it out from 1981. 7 tracks on there.
Yes, and obviously there's one for each planet, and they're so different in their character and so, well, evocative of, you know, sort of imaginary attributes of the planets, you know, or classical themes or mythological notions, you know.
Anything really.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Right. Where do we go next?
Well, a bit of a jump here, but this is all part of the timeline.
Well, you can jump wherever you want. It's in your suitcase. So.
Thank you. Yes. And so at the time, I say we were living in Washington Road, Washington Valley. And so I have this memory of watching Morecambe and Wise. It was the days of one channel. So what was on was what you watched. And so Morecambe and Wise was on. I mean, we enjoyed it anyway. So that was no problem. But they had a pianist who played Chattanooga Choo Choo. And I thought, man, what fantastic music. You know, wartime big band stuff. I mean, he was playing it on piano, but just the complexity of the, you know, the chord structures and the melody and all that, all this stuff that wasn't part of the music that I had been playing.
Okay.
To be honest.
So this is something new now?
Yes.
Strikes your ear?
Yes.
Gets your attention?
And at about that, well, also living in that house, I had bought a big stereo system from shop in town at the time, Keith Walker's. It's now where House of Travel or Flight centre is. So I had big speakers and I had a record player and all that sort of thing. So I started buying music of this sort. So right. Jazz, big band. Obviously, I had Mars, the Bringer of War as well. And so I got, I still got the Glenn Miller record. And I chose Chattanooga Choo Choo, not because it in itself is my most favourite tune, but if you look at the stuff on the internet, there was Glenn Miller during the war, they did a film called Orchestra Wives, in which they play a lot of their hits. And there's sort of a story, and you see the band come to rehearsal, some of the film action takes place, and then they say, well, we'll have a rehearsal, off we go, and they start rehearsing and then playing Chattanooga Choo Choo. And it's got a vocal line there. One of their saxophone players, Tex, it looks like Beneke, I don't know if that's how you say it, does a vocal. They had a vocal four-part harmony group called the Modern Airs that sung with them. And just everything about it just has a sweet but driving, rich sound to me. So I came to love big band music. So if we could have the Glenn Miller Orchestra playing Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Why not?
I'd get in that mood.
Well, let's get it on. This is a new one again on me.
It's my day. Bend an ear and listen to my version
of a really solid Tennessee excursion.
Pardon me, boy, is that the Chattanooga Choo Choo?
Yes, yes, track 29.
Boy, you can give me a shine.
Can you afford to board Chattanooga Choo Choo?
I got my fare
and just a trifle to spare.
You leave the Pennsylvania station about a quarter to four. Read a magazine and then you're in Baltimore.
Dinner in the diner, nothing could be finer
than to have your ham and eggs in Carolina.
When you hear the whistle blowing eight to the bar, then you know that Tennessee is not very far.
Shovel all the coal in, gotta keep it rolling.
Ooh, ooh, Chattanooga, there you are.
There's gonna be a certain party at the station.
Satin and lace.
I used to call Funny Face. She's gonna cry until I tell her that I'll never roam.
So Chattanooga Choo Choo,
won't you choo choo me home?
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
get aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
all aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga, Chattanooga Choo Choo,
won't you choo choo me home?
Chattanooga Choo Choo.
We'll be right back.
bit of big band swing.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, and there's a few elements there to say. There's the harmony vocals and the swing music, and probably a bit later on I'll talk about what that led to in my life if we have time.
Well, we're in Founders. No time doesn't exist in Founders Park. This is a tiny town. There is no time.
I'm just worried about sea level rising on this little desert island. But, there we go. Yeah. So my next track, shall we press on?
Well, it's entirely up to you. Like we were just talking off air, I suppose, how that was a shift in what you were listening to, and that opens up a whole other world. Even for me, hearing that with Frank Sinatra and that, like, it wouldn't have been music I would have been drawn to, you know, back, what, 30s, 40s.
Mm.
And then slowly but surely, as I've gone back listening to music, you just keep pushing further back. Then you're back listening to 20s blues, and you're listening to swing and things like that from the turn of the century. Like,
indeed.
Whereas once upon a time, oh, I listened to the blues and I listened to rock, but I won't listen to anything else. But then you start to go back and go back and go back and go back, and you end up generally back around the 1900s with this going on or this in the pipeline and the blues, the really, really primitive blues recordings. And it's great. And of course, the classical music before that went on to influence so much as well, you know.
Yeah.
But let's kick on, Martin. The more music we can play, the better. You know.
Okay, this sort of feels like a leap. Well, I guess it was, you know. So I moved into a flat from Washington Valley, moved into a flat in Tasman Street with my brother, again, as it happens. And the flat was an established flat with friends that we knew, and a couple that we knew, and Reg introduced me to Steely Dan and Tony Joe White.
Right.
And they've been constant companions ever since, and really quite different, of course, you know. But I'm sure Reg mentioned other music as well, but these were the two that really hit home. And Steely Dan's precision, their sort of, you know, precision, their rock consciousness, but their jazz awareness as well. I mean, they're not things I would have said at the time, but they, I'm clear that.
Would you like the sound of it, though? You
know, I'd like the sound of it. And I love the energy, and I love the guitaring. And the track I've chosen is Don't Take Me Alive off. God, here we go. I'm not much of a. Anyway.
But do you know what?
Don't Take Me Alive.
Have a guess.
Oh, this is it Pretzel Logic? Oh, my son's going to kill me.
Do you know what? I'll look it up. Oh, I won't look via Don't Take Me Alive. Is that what you said?
Can I phone a friend? I mean, I do know, but my mind's gone blank.
No, that's fine.
Can I phone a son?
What's the name of it again? Don't Take Me Alive.
Don't Take Me Alive. It must be Royal Scam or Pretzel Logic.
Well, I'll probably have to play it and see which one plays. There's a few. Yeah. No, don't worry. We'll stick it on. It's I have it here anyway.
I've
Spotify does. It's on. It's coming from various different sources. So
has it got a picture?
It has. What's the picture of?
Well, you tell me, and I'll tell you.
The Royal Scam.
Oh, would good. Right? Thank you.
Would that be right?
Yep.
1976.
Yes, let's say
he's sleeping on a couch outside.
Yes.
That's the version you want. Sleeping on a bench, maybe. No,
no, that's Pretzel Logic. Oh, sorry.
Yeah?
Andrew, I'm sorry. Andrew's my son.
Don't take me alive, Andrew.
Yes, that's right.
This is Steely Dan. This is Martin's 15th choice.
Thank you.
Don't take me alive to the desert island. Well, that's where you're going. It doesn't matter.
No,
dead or alive, you're heading to Clare Island, yeah. Martin, with a good suitcase of tracks and Steely Dan. I knew they'd feature. I knew they'd feature somewhere along the line. And we were just talking there about, they're the perfect example of a band that you'd know a handful of hits. I would know a handful of their hits.
Mm.
But like that, there's... Oh, for always
every,
more. Like.
For every hit, there's half a dozen that's sleeper
it.
Tracks.
That's that it. Replay, sleeper tracks. That's the word.
Play
that's
enormous. Word, yeah, yeah, play listening. And so yeah, they became a huge favourite for me, and I've pretty much seen them a couple of times, three times I think. Yeah, three times, and then of course, you know, Walter Becker, who was the partner with Donald Fagen, died some years ago, and Donald Fagen has got his own. Recording history, and again, if you like Steely Dan, I think you'd love Donald Fagen as well. So he's done a lot of stuff, and he's still touring the Steely Dan band.
Right.
Yeah. So that's Steely Dan. I mean, I could say a great deal more, but I'll say the other artist that I was introduced to at that time was Tony Joe White. So he's a Southern blues man, I suppose you might say, but not just the blues.
Right.
The track I've chosen is called Saturday Night in Oak Grove, Louisiana. And
that sounds like a blues song.
It is, but it's very sort of, and you know, I mean, the term swamp rock gets sort of bandied about.
Yeah.
It's from that part of the world, I guess, but this isn't swampy at all. It's quite an upbeat one about, you know.
And it's a short one, 2 minutes.
It is. How to amuse yourself on a Saturday night in that place. But I just love Tony Joe White's voice, the simplicity of his songs, and how much you can get out of listening to a simple song as much as you can out of Steely Dan's complexity.
Well, now you said it. That's the beauty of it, isn't
it? Yes.
That's the beauty of it. And we'll have to admire and mention the album cover.
Yeah, that's the one, Homemade, homemade
nice
Ice
simple.
Cream.
Yeah. Yep,
and that's the album I got at the time.
The handmade writing on the front of it and handmade buttons on the shirt that didn't close.
That's right. And I've seen Tony Joe White twice. Once was, he supported Tina Turner.
Oh, no way.
I think they both had the same Australian agent or something like that. And he came as the support act of Tina Turner, who played here in the Trafalgar Park.
No way.
And I went purely to see Tony Joe White. So he was performing with a drummer only. And, you know, he was the opening act. And, I mean, it was every bit as good as I'd expected. And I thought, well, I've paid to see Tina Turner. You know, I sort of respect her, but I'm not a huge fan. Well, I'm here. I may as well stay. I found that Tina Turner concert such a buzz.
Go ahead.
I was just so professional, so well done, such high energy.
Yeah.
I came out of that show. I'd gone down. It must have been summertime. I was wearing sandals. And I thought, I strapped my sandals up tight and ran home to Seymour Avenue just out of pure energy that I'd absorbed from that concert.
Wow.
Just to do something with it, you know.
Yeah.
Running 2 or 3K in sandals isn't easy, but I did it. Yeah. And then the other time with Tony Joe White was he played at the Bodega, a bar in Wellington, and I went with friends and we sort of sat this far away from him.
No way.
Yeah.
That's gas.
Mm.
Well, let's get it on. This is Saturday Night in Oak Grove, comma, Louisiana.
Yes.
And it's the first track off Homemade Ice Cream, which came out in 1973. And it's Martin's choice tonight on Clare Island Cassettes.
You get home just about sundown and jump into the shower, and now you're starting to unwound, and you know you've only got an hour to comb your hair and put your good clothes on. Everything has got to be right, cause it's Saturday night. You call your best friend on the telephone to drop by and pick you up, and just about 7, you hear him coming with his fiberglass mufflers on his pickup truck. Cause when you look good, ooh, baby, you feel good. Everything is gonna be right, cause it's Saturday night. Circle the Dairy Queen to see who is hanging out with you, elbow stuck out the window. You don't care if it all hangs out, cause when you feel good, ooh, mama, you look good. Everything is gonna be right, cause it's Saturday night.
Keeping with the blues tradition, short and snappy, to the point.
Yes.
Good lyrics. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
That's good.
And,
that's
good. You know, sort of seeing him, well, seeing him on, you know, YouTube clips and seeing him perform, just sort of envied his, you just open his mouth and this deep, rich voice just falls out, no effort. And, yeah. So.
Very good. So you're bringing that with you.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Have you thought about the book or the luxury item?
Yeah, I have. Well, I think the luxury item would have to be the guitar.
Okay.
Yeah. And if I'd reached my baggage limit, I'd take a harmonica instead and try and learn that.
Surely you'd squeeze a harmonica in some place, wouldn't you?
I'm sure I could, yes. Yeah.
What about a book?
The book, The Best of Beachcomber by J.B. Beachcomber was J.B. Morton. Beachcomber was the pen name of J.B. Morton, who was a English humorist in the early to middle years of last century. And he wrote a column for one of the British daily papers that was just sort of a surreal, spontaneous, just whatever he wanted to write was what went in. And heavily influenced, Spike Milligan would name him as an influence.
Okay.
So here we are going back, you know, track ourselves back through the Goons and Spike and J.B. Morton. And I've got a book of his the best of, you know, and it's, I just dip into it sometimes just last thing at night, or I just want something light and or wacky to read. And
fits the bill.
J.B. Morton's the man.
Right, yeah. Very good.
Yes.
Very good. What's your next track?
My next track, this is again a bit of a, we've leapt a little bit chronologically, but between those years in the flat and some various other things, and I went to the UK and I came back from the UK in 1983. And I was working at Nelson College as a technician, and I had a little workshop, and there was a group of pupils who would come into that workshop. They had just an interest in sort of building things, making things, so I was repairing overhead projectors and stuff like that. And one of them was a musician, and he told me about his brother, who had been guitarist in the what was called at the time the Nelson Sun City Big Band. And he wanted to, you know, he wanted to leave the band and move on to something else. I think he was moving on to classical guitar. And they needed someone. And I thought, gosh, I would love to play in a big band. I mean, I've had this background of enjoying the music. Anyway, I ended up as rhythm guitarist for the Sun City Big Band for about 12 years. It was called the Beggs Sun City Big Band. It was sponsored by Beggs. And we had a uniform and all that. And so I thrown in the deep end a bit. Unfortunately, you know, rhythm guitar in a big band isn't it's the back line. You know, there's not a huge spotlight on you. But I was happy to be thrown in that deep end and to get my head and my fingers around some of the complexities of this music. So, you know, the chords, reading rhythm charts. I don't think I ever took a solo in that band. I've never considered myself a guitar soloist. But we were, I was in that, I think it was, no, was it 12? Anyway, it was a number of years, and, you know, bands come and go, but it's still going today, and its current form would be the Nelson Jazz Club Big Band. I think there's at least one or two people in that who were in the the Sun City Big Band that I was in 1984, 5, and thereon for a few years.
Right.
Yeah, and we did things like, we did national and or Labour Party conferences. We were the music. We played.
You take anyone's money.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah, band for hire. We played at things in Trafalgar Street, and we went over to Blenheim, Picton once for a big band festival, and things like that. So, as we were saying earlier on here in the, one thing about a big band, it's like hearing a real orchestra in the raw, the volume and the dynamics that are possible. Yeah. And so just the volume and power that can come out of a big band is, I think, phenomenal. Most recently experienced that a few years ago when the Roger Fox Big Band came and played at the School of Music. But the track I've chosen, I got into a big band called the Kenny Clark Fancy Boland Big Band. And they're sort of an English European big band, and there's a, I think it's a jazz standard called Johnny One Note, and they do a fantastic sort of powerful driving version of Johnny One Note. The lineup was sort of a lot of people who were well known in their own rights and small jazz bands. Some American, African American musicians who'd gone to Europe, where they were found it easier to be accepted and respected for their music. Some of them.
There's a lot of covers of this now. Who do you reckon it's on?
It's the Kenny Clark, Fancy Boland. The album's called either Smiles or More Smiles.
Kenny Clark. Let's see, can we find him? There we go. More Smiles, that's the album.
Yep.
Lovely hurling. Right. Let's get this on. Go on.
Yeah, no, off you go. Johnny One Note.
You're listening to Martin and Kieran, Fresh FM. There's more than one note there, Johnny. That was the Kenny Clarke, Francie Boland Big Band.
Yeah.
And that was Martin's choice on Clear Island Cassettes.
Yes, that's right. So, yeah, that's to
make a hell of a racket, don't they, those big
they
bands?
They do, yes. And it's just fantastic to be awash in that power.
That's
it's like
it is,
probably,
yeah.
You know, like being in the mosh pit at a rock band,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A big sound.
Indeed, yeah. Now, I talked about going over to Picton for a big band get-together sort of thing. On the way back, of course, I went over with Paula, my wife, and we gave one of the guys a lift home. We went round Queen Charlotte Drive, because he was, to drop him off, he was meeting some people there and having a camping trip. Steve, his name, later in the piece or during that period, wanted to start a small band, like a jazz group, and approached me, would I want to play guitar in it? And, you know, I mean, I was intimidated by the notion and backed off, because I never sort of saw myself in that role. At the same time, I was desperate to do it. And I wanted to be someone, you know, I wanted to be able to play like Barney Kessel or Kenny Burrell or Wes Montgomery. I could have chosen any of their tracks as sort of preliminaries to the one I am going to choose. Anyway, Steve kept on, and I kept humming and harring, and in the end I said yes. And we formed a little group. It was bass, drums, guitar and saxophone. Steve played saxophone. And Steve was just so encouraging of me that I so appreciated it. And although every gig was – well, not every gig, but initially gigs were so traumatic, but, you know – we managed. We did okay, and you know, Steve was such a sort of a great band leader. You know, I mean, I've had other experiences in bands where you know the vibe isn't pleasant, but
right.
This was a good vibe. And the first gig I think we did, first one may have been the Anchor Bar and Grill, but certainly the first or second was a place in Motueka. It's now got another name. It was Hot Mamas at the time. Drove over to Hot Mamas and played this gig. And the tune I remember sort of from that time is a jazz standard called Blue Bossa. Now, I don't know whose version we were doing, but, you know, it's a standard. So, like, you know, jazz, everybody knows it, and, you know, your version would be as acceptable as anyone else's because it's part of the standard.
That's the whole point, isn't it?
It's the material. Here's the material. You go and interpret it.
Yeah.
But I found a version I quite like that's got a saxophone player, and it's by a guy called Bob Mintzer, Mintzer, doing Blue Bossa. And just while that's coming, you know, so I went on from that to, you know, gradually getting a bit more confident and ended up in the Nelson Jazz Club at one point when Tuesday night at the Vic Rose was jazz night. I think I was in about two or three different lineups. And, I found myself doing a lot of this sort of thing and taking the odd solo.
Right. Well, this is Blue Bossa by Bob Mintzer at Martin's request. You got fans outside, Martin?
Yes.
They must remember you from those bands. Thank you. That's jazz.
Yes.
And that's why it's over 7 minutes long, because, like we said, people do what they want to do.
Yes.
That's a blues standard called Blue Bossa. And yeah, it's kind of a mix, I'm reading here. It's a mix between the bossa nova and the bop, hard bop and bossa nova. That's what's kind of a blend of their
sound. Well, it would have been a bossa nova rhythm, and the solos would have, I don't know, would have been perhaps a bit more getting towards bebop sort of stuff. Right. Yeah, that's the...
That's our recommended daily allowance of jazz today.
Yes.
Always good to get it in.
Yeah, and out.
Exactly. Right. Well, that's a fair selection and well backed up. You've done your homework. I appreciate
that. Well, I've had that life.
Heavily involved in all different types of spheres.
Yeah, that's one element of it. Yeah, one little strand.
And like we were saying off air, we'll revisit the other list at some point.
So it seems, yes.
Which will be have a different flavour and taste to it.
Yes, yeah.
A different era, part of the journey.
Yeah, and come from a different place about...
More vocals, bit of gospel.
And stuff that I must have regardless of where it fits in the timeline, you know.
That's the whole point, isn't it? Because you're going to the Clare Island and you could be there for a while and you'd want to have what you have and you want to know that you're going to enjoy it.
Indeed, yeah. I want to be able to turn over that cassette knowing I'm going to enjoy the other side.
Exactly. Yes. So you're sitting on the island. All these tracks are in a suitcase. The tide is after rushing in. You were half asleep. There's only one you can save. Which one are you going to save?
I think
you hate this.
No, well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean...
Theoretically, let's just say theoretically.
Steely Dan. Steely Dan corpus,
okay.
I think, would have to be it.
That you'd put your life on the line for that one.
And, Steely Dan, Donald Fagen.
That's where you're at.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, that's been great. Fair play for coming in, Martin.
Thank you. Thank you, Kieran.
You've done your research. We'll have you in again for sure. You have that other list I know is going to burn a hole in your on your worktop, so we'll get to that soon enough.
Yeah, okay. That's been.
Fair play.
Very good. Thank you very much. And relaxed into it. And I'm sure that came across.
Well, oh, yeah. Well, that's the great thing about this place. You're in Founders. It's a tiny town.
That's right.
We're fenced off from the rest of everything else.
Yeah, but we can see it happening out there.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a great place. That's why I always say it. It's a great place to even just come in and listen to some music.
Mm.
It's a nice studio. It's quiet. Put on whatever you want. There's no one knocking on the window or tapping on your shoulder.
You're not allowed in.
No, community radio. It's great. thanks for coming in. We'll get this up and spread the good word.
Thank you, Kieran.
Fair play.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you at the next episode.
You've just listened to an episode of Clare Island Cassettes with me, Kieran, the newest, most original show on Fresh FM. This show was brought to you by TOTM Productions. If you enjoyed it and think you might even enjoy more of them, they can be found on Fresh FM's website. They're also on YouTube and every place else you gorge on your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next time on The Pier at Runa.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show. First broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.